Hi, my name is Michal. I'm an alcoholic. It works at all? I haven't had a drink today. And my sobriety, it starts and it ends with this. That's the simplest and the most important thing that I do every day. I just don't drink. And when I got this phone call today to speak, I felt that it's the... You can make me more happy. Thank you for thinking about me and for calling me. This group feels so important to me, beyond what I understand. And it's not the number of people, obviously. Today we're very small, and it feels so important. And you know, guys, that I'm going to El Paso this weekend, and the other day, a couple of days ago, I was like praying and meditating, and I've been preparing myself for a while to this leaving, because I've been knowing that I'm leaving this boyfriend, and there are many things that I'm letting go of. I love Dallas, I have a garden at the backyard that I've grown, and I have to let go of it. And I have a new car that was bought especially for me that I have to let go of. And I have a new job that this week I had to let go of, and which is very cool. But when I and these things were hard to let go of, but were okay. And when I this other morning I was praying and I was thinking about you, I started crying. It just hurts. I don't want to try to analyze. It just hurts me. And you've become so important to me in such a short time. And I will try to tell my story. I've never spoken for such a long time. Like in Israel, we'll go 15, 20 minutes. And also when I took my chip in the Richardson group, it was like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, I don't know. And... not to offend anybody from the Richardson group. I was just about to switch my home group to this group before I realized that I was leaving. Just because this group is like a dream that I could never dream. Like it's beyond what I could want for myself. And I will try a little bit to tell my story, and I will try to be organized with what I say. I was born 34 years ago in Israel, and I haven't started drinking right away, but I was an alcoholic right from the beginning. I remember playing with kids and like feeling that something is so different about me, and feeling this shame from the age of 5 probably, Also, another thing about this group, remember we went softball practicing, and I was a chubby kid, and I was like, I have an eating disorder, not just alcoholism, and I was a chubby kid, and when we went softball practicing, I was like, it was astounding to me, both that you let me in your group and you let me be one of you, and not being ashamed of the way I looked. And not being ashamed of me at all. Like, I admit that when we got there, I was like, oh my God, they are a group, and I'm just me. And I so wanted to, like, naturally, I wanted to, you know, be just shameful me, but you didn't let me. You just kept me a part of you, and it was astounding to me. I don't think that I'm being dramatic. It was astounding, and I came home that day, and I was, like, feeling that something changed in me, really. And so I was an alcoholic child way before I started drinking. In fact, I wasn't the drinking type alcoholic because I was like this nerd. I was good in school. I was very bright. I was very shy, chubby. I was convinced that to this day, I'm convinced. I was convinced that I was ugly. So I was very like, And then when I had my first boyfriend, it was like the first time that I thought that maybe I could not belong really, but at least pretend that I'm like other humans. And I think I started drinking in my army service, which is very difficult. You know, it's hard to be a soldier and to be drinking. And I didn't do much of it, but in occasions, in parties, to the point that I wasn't drinking a lot, but I was drinking enough to right away see that, oh, something is, it's like this thing that you go and it doesn't, like this, how would I say, you would know, like a thing without an end, like that I can go and it will not end, and I knew that something was not okay, I just knew, but I kept doing my thing. And also one thing that I want to say, I grew up in a very bad family. Like, you know, some people, they come to AA and they say that they had a good family and it's just them and their alcoholism. And for me, I grew up in a bad family. Like, my father was very violent, and most of the years of my growing up, I don't remember, just because, you know, I guess because of the trauma, I can't get there yet. And so when I first came to AA and people like were saying this thing about their alcoholism, I was so always used to think that I was drinking because of what was going on in my childhood, that I was like convinced that people were in denial when they were saying that their family was okay, because I was sure that was the thing. You grow up in a bad family and then you drink. Like, I couldn't see another pattern. And it's because I didn't understand at that time alcoholism. I didn't understand then that it was a thing that didn't depend on anything. It was just is. Alcoholism is a thing that is in me, and that's it. It took me quite a while to get this. So I went into the army, and with bed scars from my childhood, and I went into this officer course. That because of it, Mike calls me a machine gun. But I was not a fighter. I was so not. Maybe on the outside I did look like maybe I looked to you. I don't know. But I did well and everything, and I looked tough. But inside I was always such a soft, you know, nerd. And I was afraid when we would go to shoot, like train shooting. It scared me. The noise scared me. And I was so not an officer. And in fact, when I did this officer course, my parents finally decided to divorce, which was a blessing, because at least they stopped the police in the middle of the night. And I just felt that I was collapsing, like I couldn't hold it together anymore. Before, I'm a very strong-willed person, so before this, I always like tried to pretend and keep everything together, and this point was like, I can't do it anymore. I'm like collapsing. So when the course ended and I became an officer, I just went to a psychiatrist in the army, and of course nobody could know that I went there, and I crashed and I cried and I talked with him. And in one of the first meetings I was like mentioning my drinking. And I was thinking, maybe I was not very aware of what I was doing, but I was like trying to see if he can help me on this, because I felt that it was like when you start a sweater and you pull the string, and you know, it's like this thing. I felt totally not controlled in that area, and I was like, let's see what he says. And I mentioned my drinking. And he was like, okay, let's make a plan. Let's decide that on this and this, you don't drink on the days, da-da-da-da-da, and you only drink up to da-da-da-da-da. And that moment, it was like, forget it. I'm not talking with him anymore. Because no way, I'm not talking with him. So I went into my army service, and I did my things. I did drinking, and at that point, I discovered the power of being with men. So I was like, one was not enough. I was more into the excitement than to anything else. So it was like a five thing going on, like this and this and this, and try to not have them know about each other. And like, it was a thing that kept me because, you know, I'm an alcoholic and I could not drink that much because I was in the army, but I had to have something keep me. So that kept me. And also I started smoking cigarettes, and like within, I think, a couple of months, I was up to 2 packs a day. Like, I'm so, so heavy in my using. And the thing was that at this point, I felt, maybe I was not very conscious, but I felt that my life was so messed up. Nothing made sense to me. I didn't know where I was going, what I wanted. Why, like, what is it, this thing? Everything felt so mixed up, and I just was trying to, you know, remain on top of the water, and it's just nothing made sense. It was so difficult. It became more and more difficult from one day to another. And I was in the army, because I'm very smart, they took me to this computer course, exclusive. It's a 7 months, very, very intense course. And so I did computers, and I stayed in the army for 5 years. And imagine, like, being in, for an alcoholic, being in this very strict place that they can, I couldn't really drink. I couldn't, not as much as I wanted. I couldn't at all have the life that I would want to have as an alcoholic. I didn't have the ease of alcohol at this point, and I knew I couldn't because I was very controlling. But anyways, towards the end of my army service, my childhood friend, she was studying in Jerusalem. She wrote me a letter. I was going to say email, no, letter, making amends to me. Obviously, she found AA, and she made amends to me about something, and she told me she found this program, da-da-da-da-da, and she mostly focused on the inner insight that it brought her, how she now has a way of life. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go to Jerusalem, because I have to have this. Like, I knew she connected it with her drinking, and I thought it was one place in the universe, and I was going to go to Jerusalem. And then I discovered, back then I was living in Tel Aviv, and I discovered that there were groups, actually, all over, and I started going to AA. And was very excited. Okay, no. First, I was very overwhelmed by the thing. Like, you would go in a circle and hold hands and say a prayer and talk about God, and all these things seemed very bizarre to me, but from the very first meeting, I knew that I found my place. And I maybe didn't admit it, haven't admitted it, but I knew that, hey, they say God and everything, which meant nothing to me, but I heard something. And I was like, yes, I'm going to stick to this place, which was overwhelming. I was only 22, and I was not mature. Now I'm 34 and I'm not very mature to my age. And back then I was like very not mature. And so I was like, I would say, like, flirting with program. I would come to program. It was like the main thing in the beginning was like being around people after being so isolated. And by isolated, I don't mean that I wasn't around people. I was around people. And I was pretending to be a part of, but I never was a part of, because I was so, like, feeling other and just other. And this place, everybody talked somehow my language. It was me. And so it was the first time that I felt that I was really a part of a people. And I flirted with it. I loved it. And I just made friends, and I loved it. And I came, and I drank, and I came, and I decided not, and I took a sponsor, and I didn't drink for 3 weeks, and I drank, and I came to meetings, and I just did my thing. And then something terrible happened to me. I finished the army, and I was going to start school. I was going to study psychology, I think. And then my son, and I had like this chunk of, I think, 5 months before school started, and I just went to a lot of meetings, and I told myself that I was into recovery. It didn't bother me that I was still drinking. But I went to meetings, and I was working the steps. That's the craziness. I was riding a fourth step, and I was drinking. And it did. And the thing is that it didn't bother me. I thought that I was really contributing to my recovery, not sobriety, recovery. Anyways, my sponsor, it was July 22nd, this very successful young person, her name was Michal too, she committed suicide. She shot herself. Like, she didn't just, you know, like, signal to the world, hey, I'm desperate. She took pills and shot herself. She really wanted to die. And that was, oh my God, that was so bad. Because I, the immature me at that age, and you know how they say, take a sponsor whom you want what they have. And I was so convinced that I got to kill myself. Like, I really thought that I didn't have a choice. And I was, like, so childish. And I didn't know what to do with it. So for a couple of weeks, I was alone in my bedroom in the dark and having all these crazy thoughts. And then, like a very good alcoholic, my friend from the Army, he was then studying in New York, and he came for vacation. It was the summer, so he came for vacation for like 2 weeks. And I was like him. I marked him, and he became my boyfriend within like 2 days, I think. And then I went with him to New York because I couldn't stay in Israel because I just didn't know what to do with myself. And I, you know, at that point, now maybe also, but then for sure, I was going to these meetings with these alcoholics, and my parents were like, okay, let her do her thing. But when this sponsor committed suicide and they saw what it did to me, they were like, oh my God, that's not a joke anymore. Like, hey, maybe no, maybe it's not the right thing for you to do. And I didn't know what to do. So I just made a geographic. I moved to New York, started going to school there instead of in Israel, went to meetings there, kept drinking, of course, and I don't know, like, I guess that it takes what it takes, but I kept drinking, and somehow it was like, it bothered me, but it didn't not make sense to me. And so, and I remember even one, I'm a very organized person, like, I always remember everything, like, my mind is like a computer, and I always have everything with me. And on one of my drunks, somebody stole my wallet from me, and it had everything, like my passport, I had a diplomatic visa because I was working for the consulate, like everything, checks, and somebody used them. And I remembered that was like a first bottom that I reached, that, hey, things are happening to you that are not you anymore. Like, I remember noticing this. But I kept drinking, kept going to meetings, and then, thank God, I was maybe honest enough to realize that something was not making sense. Like, going to meetings and hearing people say, I'm sober today, I'm grateful, and me not being sober, it stopped making sense to me at one point, and I just, you know, stopped going to meetings because I didn't like the feeling of, like, you know. And then I went on a 6 month kind of binge. Again, it wasn't like my drinking mostly was I tried to control it because I was working in the Israeli consulate, and I was paying salaries. I was the accountant, believe it or not. I was paying salaries to the ambassador and everybody, and I couldn't be really off. And I had this thing in my drawer, and I would, like, take a sip every once in a while. So it was, like, appearingly controlled, but it was so not controlled. And I knew it was not controlled. I felt like it was a bomb ticking on me. It was so not controlled. And it was scary, so scary. And how much time do I have? So, and I was going to school full time, and I was working full time, and I was like having this crazy life, living with this boyfriend, trying to hide from him my drinking. I don't know what he knew. Like, how numb a person can be not knowing that something was not okay with me. Or maybe he knew. I don't know. It was New York. I remember it was a bad winter, and New York was like, there were days you wouldn't want to go out because of the snow. And I did go out, and I did my thing out, and I came back, and did he smell? I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, at the end of this winter, we went on vacation to Orlando, and we went to Disney World, and we did all these things, these funny things, and I don't know the word for it, but I wasn't a playful person. Like, I wasn't a very happy person who goes and does stuff like children, but I did that with him, and I had stuff in my bag because I needed it. And when we came back from that vacation, I was like, I can't take it anymore. I remember I remember a picture in the elevator in our building. I was like bumping myself to the walls of the elevator because I couldn't take it anymore. And if you ask me what it is that I couldn't take, I don't know to tell you. Was it the self-hatred? Was it something? Was like, I'm shooting myself, or I can't drink anymore. And not right away, a week later, like it took me a week to get ready, and a week later I went into an AA meeting and I stopped drinking right away. And you know, that was February 2nd, 1994. But my sobriety date is July 23rd, 1995. And for this year, I was not drinking. I was very determined to, I'll show the world I'm not drinking. And of course I was not working the steps. I did take a sponsor, whom, you know, looking back, I'm thinking, I couldn't know that then, but it's like you can tell by the sponsor a person chooses how serious they are. I took a sponsor not with very much time, and I would call her almost every day, and most days she would not be there at our time. It didn't bother me at all. And at one point I stopped calling her, and I didn't go to meetings at all, maybe once a week, which now I never go to less than three, most of the time four or five or even more. I didn't go to meetings because the people in the rooms seemed to me very depressed, and they somehow reminded me of my sponsor, my dad's sponsor, and I was like, yeah, guys, I have this allergy with alcohol, so I'm not drinking, but I am not going to be a part of you because I don't need, again, this thing when I'm opening myself to a person, I'm trusting them and they're shooting them. No way. So I'm not drinking, okay? I'm not drinking. And this is so, like, profound to me today. This year and a half of not drinking but not being sober, being a dry drunk, is so profound to me today because this is really the basis of my sobriety. Because in this exact year, I realized, I learned what alcoholism is. It's not about my drinking. It's not. Because I stopped drinking, and ever since that February 2nd, 94, I never wanted to drink again. Really, I was like, okay, I'm not dealing with alcohol anymore. But alcoholism is not about this. Why? Because that year, I became very, happy, proud person. I was so full of myself. And they tracked me in school to this very exclusive program to go to Harvard, to law school. And I was so, yes, so like convinced that I have it now. And somehow, I don't know what happened. After a year plus, I was fired from my job, and I was the roommate that lived with me, that was my friend, left the apartment. She didn't want to talk with me. She just left. And I, because it was a very expensive apartment in New York, you know, I had to leave too, and I had nowhere to go. And without this work in the consulate, I had a diplomatic visa, so I couldn't work, actually, when I was fired. And I don't know if that happened before or after I picked up. I don't remember. Maybe after. I one day found myself, one morning, found myself drinking, going down. I didn't have it at home. I went down and I, one Saturday morning, wasn't planning to do it, wasn't thinking about it a minute before. It just happened to me. And it lasted a whole day of drinking. And then I was like, no, it never happened. And I pretended that everything was okay. And then a week later, again, without me planning. And then it was a whole weekend thing of drinking. And I dragged myself to a meeting on a Saturday evening at the YMCA. And walked out from the meeting, bought something, and like kept drinking until the night after. And just in the meeting in Sunday night, I stopped drinking. I think afterwards they fired me, and then the roommate left. And the professor who worked with me on this exclusive plan, he disappeared. He didn't want to talk with me. I left messages in his machine, and he never called me back. And I didn't know what happened. I really didn't know what happened, and I was, anyways, it took me a while. First, of course, I didn't want to tell anybody that I was not having a year and a half of sobriety, and I started going a little bit to meetings, but I kept my year and a half, okay? And it took me a while, and they even let me speak. Like in New York, it's kind of different. Like a speaker meeting, you lead a meeting, you talk 20 minutes. And anyways, it took me a while to take a sponsor, Linda, my first great sponsor, and to start going to meetings. And I remember asking her, I think I mentioned it in this group, I told her, and slowly I opened to her because I had so many issues, right? I didn't have a job. Everything was not okay with me. So I started opening to her. And she would help me. Like, she would spend so much time with me every night on the phone on our time. And we had a 10 o'clock call. And, you know, it became so important to me that even if I was walking in the middle of the street, I would stop at a payphone and call her. I wouldn't miss our time. And I started going to meetings and sharing in meetings. And one time I told her, Linda, but I hear them say 90 meetings in 90 days, but I don't need that, right? No, before this, okay. Before this was the point that I had, I somehow felt that I needed to maybe tell her that I was not clean for a year and a half. And I was shivering, my ego. Oh, let me tell you, my ego is so bad. And I just made a decision, and that July 23rd, after the meeting, I talked with her, and I was like, listen, I had a slip. And that day was my first day, the day that I admitted to her. And the day after, when I had to go to a meeting, and they asked people counting days, and I was like, day one, I was shivering, really. Anyways, and then, like, people were saying 90 meetings in 90 days, and I was like, not me, right? Because I've been around, yes, I know the deal. And Linda said, you know what, Michal, maybe you want to go to as many meetings as you can. Because obviously she could tell I was so messed up. I couldn't. I thought I knew it. And I ended up going to meetings every day for the first year and a half of my sobriety. And the more I went to meetings, the more I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. It took me, it wasn't right away, because I think in the first 2 months I was depressed. And like physical depression, I couldn't really see. I saw most of the sight was like black. I couldn't see. And I think that the first realization that I had was that this book, this man, Bill somebody, you know, 7 years ago in another country, not even Jewish, not even a woman, he was me. And I've known this book for years at that point, but it was not, it was so not about me, right? Because it's not me. Like alcoholism, all this stuff of not being honest, it wasn't me. And I think the first realization that I had was that, oh my God, this is me. And every page was like, oh my God, in the doctor's opinion, when he talks about us and he looks at us and he sees that thing that we have, that we are so like loving the drink, that no matter how much we know and how long we stay sober, we are somehow bound to go back to drinking, and he sees that on us. And I was like, oh my God. And every day I would read another page, and and it wasn't a happy thing for me, because I'm such an ego person. Like, I so want to think good of myself. And it just got worse and worse. I was like seeing every word had a meaning. And it was just like in this movie with this guy who chases a murderer, and he ends up, what's the name of the movie? Ends up discovering that he's the one that he's chasing, that he's the murderer. Angel's Heart. So that was the beginning of my sobriety, and I was very depressed. And I really wanted to die. Not in the sense of shooting myself, but in the sense that it was unbearable. Like, the thoughts were so unbearable. And I went to a meeting every day and made phone calls like crazy, like 10. They say 3. In my group, they said 3. I made like 10, 20. And called my sponsor every day. And after a month and a half, I went to Israel for a visit. And two things I remember from that. I remember first asking my sponsor whether it's okay to go to see my family. It's such an early stage of my sobriety. And she said, yeah, it sounds like you're planning to stay sober. And I remember driving to my, not driving, going by bus to my grandmother in Haifa. That's a town in the north. And my grandmother was very alcoholic, although not with alcohol. She was alcoholic. She was, anyway, so I went to a meeting there. And I remember the old-timer of the group, somebody with 20-something years, he drove me back to the bus station. And I remember sitting with him in the car that night, and I was so scared, because I was not sure that I was going to make it. You know, how we read and how it works, that some people are not honest enough to make it. And I knew myself in that year and a half, and I was not sure that it... Because after that year and a half, I knew that an alcoholic, the thing is that when you go off track, the danger is not that you're off track, is that you don't know that you go off. You don't know. That's the thing. And if you're not with other people, there is no way for you to know, no matter how smart you are. And I'm smart. It doesn't matter. It doesn't help you. And I was not sure that I was going to make it. And I remember that night sitting with him in the car, and I was like looking at him like this. And he was like, Michal, you're going to be okay. And I remember looking at him and saying, really? And I so hoped that he knew what he was saying. And I knew that, who knows. And that night I went back to my grandmother, and I was so afraid, just because, you know, at a certain, I think after 2 months, my depression changed into anxiety, and I had all these thoughts that were like, like I couldn't handle my thinking, and I would go with Clancy's tapes all the time, and because I couldn't stand myself, so I had tapes on my ears all the time. So I went to bed at her place. My grandmother, she set me a bed on the porch, and it looks to the Mediterranean, and you know, they see the lights of the city, and I was so afraid I couldn't breathe, and I didn't want to upset her. She's like this crazy person, so I didn't want to walk in and grab a paper, and I needed to write because I needed to talk with God, and I only had my 12 and 12 with me, so I wrote on at the end of the 12th step, I wrote, and I have it until today. I was so afraid. God help me. And I came back to New York, and I, after 90 days, I started doing the steps, and I need to say to you that because I was so anxious at this point, I couldn't talk, so I would go to work. Oh, they found me a new work. God found me a new work at another diplomatic place and doing computers, which is my occupation, actually. And I would go to work, go to a meeting, and go home. I couldn't talk to regular people, to see people from the... I just couldn't. I just felt so like that I have no idea what's going on out there, and I so... don't fit that. And I started working the steps, and that was another bad winter in New York, and I just was alone in my apartment. And the thing that happened to me in my sobriety that also is very important to me is that I started writing. I never wrote before. And my novel is now publishing in Israel, and that is something that happened to me in sobriety. And for me, like, sobriety has almost, like, opened me to the person that I... maybe was meant to be, but never was. Like, I was this withdrawn person. I didn't know who I was. And so that happened at the third step that I started writing, and right away, even my first story was published. It was like my writing has always, like, I was successful right from the beginning. And at the 10th step, around the 9th, 10th step, I started having a spiritual awakening, just like they promised. And for me, it was like, I'm not a very spiritual, spooky person in my spirituality. Spirituality is when I start hearing, because praying for me is talking, and when I actually hear something else, is for me, I hear God in my meditations, and I start hearing things, and there came a voice that told me, go back to Israel, go back to Israel. And I so didn't want to go because I had a great job there. Like, it paid really well. And I was writing, and, like, I was friends with the ambassador, and who was a writer, too. And I was, like, having this life in New York, actually. Also, I want to say that I knew when I got sober that no way I'm going to probably ever get married and have children, because I was so distorted. I could see how distorted I was after years of alcoholism, and I was like, no, it's not going to be cured. But I was having a life in spite of this, and I was like, okay, I have AA. I have people in AA. If I ever want, I'll adopt a child. And this voice started to go to Israel, and I was like, what Israel? Like, my crazy family. And I have nothing there. Like, why go back? And it's just go back. And I, after 2 months, I went back to Israel. And it was a crash. Like, I couldn't adjust to the country. And I would drive to meetings in Jerusalem every night, which is the other side of the country. But my dad, I lived with him for a while because I couldn't work. It was too hard to adjust to the country. Somehow he sensed that it was important that he comes back on time and gives me the car so that I get to an AA meeting. He somehow got that, and I would drive there like 5-6 times a week, like. And then I started having sponsees, and he somehow felt that it was important, and that, you know, to receive all these calls. I didn't know why my dad got that. He's not an alcoholic. He has an alcoholic temper, but I'll make it brief. What happened to me in Israel, I was there for 6.5 years now. First, because of my eating disorder, I started a group there that I found in New York, and now they have like hundreds of people doing what I do with my food, which is like what we do with alcohol. Like, it's complete abstinence. And I almost became a little guru, which is good that I'm out of Israel in that sense, and I'm serious. But I every year I would go through the steps. Mostly I would have step group studies that I was guiding, and at the last year I felt like drained. Like I felt that I didn't have anything to give anymore, and I always had many sponsees, and I felt that I reached a level that it wasn't willful, but something was not working for me anymore. And I thought that maybe I had to take a break and just go deeper inside. I didn't know what was going on. And and then one night at an AA meeting, I met Adam, my boyfriend, who I didn't like from the beginning, but he liked me. He took my number. He called me. And at that point, I was like, oh, I'm 34. I need to get married. And like both my brother and sister are very Orthodox, Jewish Orthodox. So I was like, I'm going to be good. I'm going to get married, have a Jewish family in Israel, da-da-da-da-da. And that guy who's American and who's not Jewish, like, calling me. And, of course, I didn't even answer the phone when I saw his number. And after a month, I didn't know why, somehow I went and had coffee with him, and then we started going out. The next thing I know, the war with Iraq breaks, and he goes back to the States. The company took him back so that nothing happens to him. And in the spring, after the war ended, I came to visit. I was here for 3 weeks, and I liked it, and I liked being with him. And next thing I know is I'm in the middle of writing a novel, so I finished the novel. I'm not even thinking that something is going to happen to it. I'm like handing it to publishers in the country, renting my apartment. I bought an apartment last year, and I'm coming here. And it's all like very, I have to say, because it was not about Adam, because him, we had difficulties all the time, but every time I would go on praying and meditating and talking with my sponsor, I need to say this, because meditating and my hearing of God can go, you know, it's good, but it's, you know, it's not the end. So, and it was like, yeah, I need to go. And I come here, and almost right from the beginning, I have problems with this guy whom tells me like a couple of weeks before I come that he's sober 9 years, that he stopped going to meetings, which for me, that I was so close to dying from this disease, this thing, when somebody is not going to meetings, is like, no way I'm going to talk with him. And yet I meditate, I discuss it with my sponsor, and she says, yeah, it seemed like I had to go. And I came, and I will not try to analyze why I came here, because we are breaking up these very exact days, but I will probably know at one point. I just know that when I came to this group, remember I told you that I reached this place in Israel where I felt that I didn't have any more to give, because I felt like something was not working for me anymore. When I came to this group, when I played softball with you, and I saw the sincerity of how you guys take the problem into your life with no ego. That's what I saw. Because on that day, like in the field, I was like trying to see somebody who's controlling, somebody who's like offending somebody, somebody who's like having a plan of their own. And it wasn't, no, it was like everybody was trying to be of service, and I was, and this is the first thing that I feel that happened to me in here. I love Dallas, yes, but this group, it's like it gave me a renewed sense of the program that it can be really worked with no reservation, that you can really take it to the deepest levels of your soul, to work, to family, to everything, and it's with total sincerity. And in a way, I almost feel that I invited on myself this ego shake to be in a new country and not like be a beginner again, and to be with a boyfriend that seemingly doesn't really want me in his life, and just to be shaken, so that, I don't know, I open, and I feel that I opened, and my heart breaks to this group. I hate it. I'm in peace with the rest of, and I did find a good group in El Paso, because I went last weekend and I was like calling Mike, give me people in El Paso. And I ended up checking many meetings there until I found one that is good. It has good sobriety. And I knew that if there is no good group there, I cannot go there. And I found a group there, but it's like I feel that it's not fair. Like, I don't want to give this up, but it's still, in the same time, it feels like that's the next right thing to do. And, you know, it's like even I made friends there, and she handed my resume there, and I got a call yesterday. I have already a job interview on Tuesday. So it's like I'm going because I probably need to go, and I don't know. I wish I was a smarter alcoholic to make sense of, because I feel that I'm in the middle of something which I can't yet make sense of. I don't have the picture. But I feel that my heart is so open, and I'm so trusting this program, and I don't want to be anywhere else except for this program. And
we also celebrate annual AA birthdays each Friday night, or at each Friday night meeting. Soon to be there tonight. And tonight, Steve will be celebrating 2 years of continuous sobriety. And Mike will be giving Steve his chip.
My name is Steve Dine, and I'm an alcoholic. It's right, August 24, 2001, and thank you so much. Man, there's no way that I could have done this on my own. I know coming into the program, my way did not work, and had to be constantly reminded of that. I'd really like to thank my sponsor for the actions he has given me to take, and of course, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and just... and thank God for the miracle of the program of AA. That's it. And let's start tonight off with Danny.
I'm Danny Kroll, alcoholic.
Hi, Danny.
And I've been sober since April 24th of 94. Mikhail, thank you for speaking for us tonight. Looking forward to it. And Steve, happy birthday. Seems like it was just a couple of months ago that you celebrated your 1 year, and your mother-in-law was here, and the whole gang, and Todd, he couldn't remember your name. It's already 2 years, so happy birthday. I guess I was thinking about, there's a line in our book that talks about how AA is a simple religious idea coupled with a program of action, and that it's both. And, you know, there are so many sentences in the big book that, you know, they're easy, you can almost like skip over them, but they really have so much depth and weight to them. And I was talking to, you know, a friend of mine this week, actually a guy that was at the very first meeting I ever went to, and you know, a guy I really care for, who's having a, you know, kind of a rough go of things. And we started, you know, talking, and he asked me for some help, and you know, he was calling me every day for, you know, about 3 days, and you know, and things started looking up, and then they just kind of turned south. And you know, I talked to him about, well, when's the last time you've been to a meeting? It's like, well, a week and a half. You know, when's the last time, you know, where are you when you're reading in the book? It's like, well, I don't have a book anymore. And it brings to light how important it is, you know, to actually take action and actually do things instead of, you know, just trying to get some kind of, spiritual revelation or something that'll, you know, sustain us. That, you know, what we really have to do is we have to be into action. And, you know, I'm so grateful that that's the name of our group. And, you know, I'm so grateful to have a sponsor that's more active than I am, and, you know, and blazes the path ahead. And I'm glad to be here tonight. That's all I got.
Oh, Chris McKay.
I'm Chris McGinnis. I'm an alcoholic. And I've been sober since January 25th of 91. And it's good to be here tonight. Happy birthday, Steve. It's really neat that you've been sober 2 years now. It does seem like it was yesterday that he was just 1 year sober. Mikhail, looking forward to your talk. And, gosh, I'm finally got done with the steps, and so I'll be back on Monday night. But I guess this is our last meeting tonight on a Friday night. And so I won't be around for a little while on Thursday night. But it's good to be here tonight. Kind of blank tonight. It's been a very busy week. Just, you know, working with maybe going through some changes in the program, and but not making, you know, I used to make changes on a whim and at the spur of the moment and didn't think things through. So I'm working with someone, and we're taking it slow and just thinking about, you know, maybe making some changes in my program. So that's kind of where I'm at this week. Thanks. Glad to be here.
What, Doug?
Thanks, Steve. My name's Doug Gibbs. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Doug.
Sober since December 27th of 99. Happy birthday, Stein. This is great. I forgot to call you on your birthday. I forgot to bring your card, and I wasn't going to forget you at the podium. So, happy birthday. You know, one of these lessons I've learned this week, for me, it goes back to scrubbing crockpots in Mike's alley, which was the first time in sobriety that I was out of my head for more than 5 seconds, and I remember the feeling. And for the past couple of weeks, I have noticed that the only relief from up here has been intensive work with other alcoholics. And you know, we read that in the book all the time. And it came so true this week, as I noticed I'm working with these three guys, and each little 15, 20-minute block, it's like, wow. You know, it hit me like an hour later that was an incredible amount of relief. And I need to know these things. And that's one of those things I think that we have to learn through our own experience, because I took a roll of film to Walmart, and it was 7 years old, and I got it back, and I just almost started bawling, because there were pictures of my daughter, and I mean, yeah, nice to see when she was young, but it was bothering me, and I couldn't figure it out until today. And it was because I blacked out that whole day. So we had a picture series of the whole day, and it was with my nephew, and I know that was a big deal, and I would have sworn to you that it never happened. And I mean, I must have just, I don't know how many days I lost. And that was just very unsettling. which is a good thing when you start to find yourself kind of getting comfortable, to be quickly reminded of what alcohol does to people like us. So I'm glad to be here. It's kind of nostalgic. I wish we had this place packed on our last Friday night, but oh well, here we are. Thanks.
Ronald.
I'm Ronald Cook. I'm an alcoholic. And I've been sober since May 29, 2002. I got a little stronger since then. Happy birthday, Stein, and thank you for speaking for us tonight, Makai. I remember I first met Steve. I asked him to be my sponsor, but he didn't have 2 years yet. But he met me to my sponsor. He's the reason why he was the chain that linked me and Todd together. You know, he relayed a message to Todd, and Todd became my sponsor. And thank you for that, Steve. You know, because I got a great sponsor, man. He stays on me, you know, even over the phone, you know, so you can imagine what he does in person. You know, I'm glad to be here. I don't know, that was Danny talking about being into action. Ever since I've been in this group, and I feel that since I've been in AA, this group hasn't done nothing but action. They're always doing something. Everybody is always doing something, you know, and that's what inspires me to just keep coming around, because I know if I come here, I'm not going to be the only one here. Somebody else is going to be here, too, you know, and if I need to call somebody, I mean, somebody going to pick up that phone. Nobody's never too busy, you know, and I mimic people, you know. I'm quick to mimic you. If you laugh a certain way for a year, I guarantee you I'll be laughing like you pretty soon, you know. But so it's just a matter of time before I start doing what you all are doing. This with me being in my year time, that's why I ask a lot of questions, because I want to know if I'm at the right place where I'm supposed to be, you know. And I ask, did you ever feel this way? Or you know, I work with Baxter and Mike Rafakis, and I'm always asking them questions, if they felt this way or if they did this or did that, and they're like, you know, I did this or I did that. I feel I'm right where I'm supposed to be, and God has things going the way it's supposed to go. You know, as long as I stay around and continue to give him my will and continue to accept his will in my life, then I shouldn't have a problem. You know, but I just thank y'all for staying into action. As long as you all stay into action, I mean, it's either I'm going to get into action or I'm going to be out of action. And I don't like to be out of action. You know, I want to be involved in everything. So the most famous words, keep coming back. You know, that's all I can do, and stay involved. And happy anniversary.
What, Tim? Steve, I'm Tim Moore. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tim.
Sober since June 14th, 1994, and I'm thankful for that. I'm kind of looking forward to hearing your story, and happy birthday to Steve. And I made it a point not to move this week so that Steve would stay sober. I guess I was a bit nostalgic about our little group here tonight after, I guess, 5 years that we've been here. I was thinking about our first meeting that we had in this room. And Larry and I got our birthday chips and our gifts from Spons. Made some fun of us. And, you know, this week, the thing that just hit me square between the eyes is our meeting on Monday night in that chapter to wives. And it's amazing to me how when I was new in sobriety, I'd go through that chapter and I would not identify. You know, think I don't, you know, have a wife anymore, I'm not a wife, so what does this have to do with me? And I would just basically scroll through that chapter and go on to the next ones. And reading it on Monday night, and just amazing, the stuff that it talks about directly to me, about me, in the perspective of the person that I'm harming, you know, my family, my now ex-wife, and thinking about them and the position that I put them in through my drinking. And, you know, the amazing deal is that last night,
I'm at my daughter's school, and they have like a day in the life of your kid where you get to go and go to each one of their classes and walk through like 10, 15 minutes of what they would do and during that day. And I'm there with my ex-wife. And, you know, we don't have the animosity anymore. You know, we don't have hating each other. And we're able to communicate real well when it comes to my daughter. And this has happened over a period of time. You know, we're both sober and Alcoholics Anonymous. And so it's only through God working through this program that has allowed that to happen. So I'm very thankful for that. Thanks.
Larry.
Larry McGinnis, alcoholic.
Hi, Larry.
June 12, 1995. Grateful for that tonight. Steve, happy birthday. Mikhail, looking forward to your story tonight. You know, I didn't know what day it was today. You know, and all of a sudden, people are asking me all day, say, hey, can you stay late tonight? We got to get this done. And I look at my calendar and I say, I can help you, but I got to leave at 6 o'clock. I have to. And I said, okay. Well, can you come tomorrow then? Can you come in and help out with the project tomorrow? No, I can't. I'm going to Tulsa tomorrow and be out of town. And that's just the way it is, you know. Sometimes it's like, if I let it... life can sweep AA away, you know, and I'll be gone, I'll go with it, you know, and I'll be caught in a tide, you know, just get washed out to the middle of the sea, and there I am, you know, stuck there out in the middle of the sea with no life preserver, and I can't see the shore anymore, don't know where the hell to go, and so I'm just grateful that we have this meeting tonight, you know, that I have a place to go. I have a place that I know I have to go tonight. That I'm not going to be sitting around floundering somewhere wondering what the heck I'm going to do tonight. And say, oh my God, you know, this is so boring tonight. I need something to do. And all of a sudden, bling, hey, there's a liquor store down the corner. You know, nobody will know. You just have a couple drinks. You know, it'll be different this time. I've had that conversation with myself so many times. I can't even count them all, I'm grateful I didn't have to have that conversation with myself today, because I knew I was going to be tonight. I was reading through, thanks to our sponsorship line, we've been studying the original manuscript, and so I've been doing that, you know, in the mornings, you know, lately, you know how Bill makes it in the original manuscript. Everything's like first person or second person. You know, he's talking to you, and he words everything. You will do this, and you will do this, and then the changes. You know, we go through the changes. What it's like now, and it's all changed to we. Alcoholics Anonymous is the best fellowship I've ever found before. But sometimes I can get caught up in the crowd, you know, and I forget what. My real purpose is to find that guy sitting in the back of the room. I'm sitting back there, you know, scared to death to talk to someone. Go up there and just me and him, and that's it, you know. And it's really easy to get caught up in the crowd and get part of a group, and you know, you forget about that one-to-one contact sometimes with people. I can't tell you how many times I've gone to groups before, I can walk in the door, and wearing a pair of blue jeans and a polo shirt, and these people don't know if I got 1 day, 1 hour of sobriety, or 8 years sobriety. They don't know. And sometimes I'll go through the whole meeting, that one person will come talk to me the entire meeting, you know. I've had that, you know, back when I was drinking, I've had those experiences where I couldn't get anyone to talk to me before and help me out. I am glad that I've been shown differently. Basically, that I've been shown to example to do differently, and that if someone new comes in this room, you go up and talk to him, you welcome him, tell him you're glad he's here, you know. And as always, I'm always grateful for the examples I have here, and that I in a room full of them now, and I know where I'm going to be for the next hour, and I will remember it tomorrow. You know, I'm grateful for that.
How about Bruce?
Recovered alcoholic, not cured, but recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Congratulations, Steve, on 2 years. I like this group. I think this group has a lot of good sobriety. I have been in a lot of groups that I left not really helped that much. I mean, you can't complain if you stay sober, but just about every meeting I go away feeling a lot stronger from what I hear, and I thank you for sharing your experience with me. Larry, I used to walk into groups and everybody would scatter, at least in AA they hang around. They may not talk to me, but it's a change of pace. And I'm grateful to be sober today. I doubt very seriously if I would have made another year or two if I kept drinking for health reasons and other reasons. But I have found the big book and the promises to be true. And one thing that I have gotten out of AA and not really any other place was AA taught me what was most important, what was bottom line, and helped me get my priorities straight. I went to a college that helped me do that, helped me to be bottom line, but AA more than anything else showed me how to see what was real, what reality was, what was important, and taught me the difference between spirituality and religion. And, I mean, that has benefited me in all areas of my life. And I owe that to a lot of friends and to AA. Thank you.
Mike.
Thanks, Steve. I'm Mike Erickson, alcoholic. July 19th, 87 is my sobriety date. I'm glad to be here. And you know, it's funny. I was thinking about that. Tim brought up that first meeting we had, and we celebrated Tim and Larry's birthday, and I gave Tim for his birthday present a car with no wheels on it. A little bottle car with no wheels, because Tim's wheels flew off frequently when he was new. And then Larry, I gave a telephone too, and I had ripped out all the numbers out of that telephone except for the numbers that call my house. You know, happy birthday, Steve and Mikhail. I'm looking forward to your talk tonight. You know, it seems like in Alcoholics Anonymous, times go on a roller coaster, it seems. That there are frequently some good times where everything lines up. But, you know, I've got three major areas in my life. I've got here, I've got my family, and I've got work. Those are the three big areas. And it always seems like if you can get all three of them to line up, it's just a bonus. It's just a bonus. But there always seems at some point in time that one of those areas is out of kilter. And the thing that's crazy is that I'll have two areas going great, and that one will dominate every piece of my thought. And it'll just today this deal, that's one of those deals I have at work, that it's just it's an awful environment at work. And it drains, it just is a life-sucking force that I go sit in the middle of every day. And, you know, so I've got back to this idea of prayer and meditation. My sponsor always hits me on prayer and meditation. And the thing I've been focusing on lately is make a prayer list. See, I have traditionally been a guy that gets down on my knees and prays for 2-3 minutes and gets up and boogies. And I've been reading all kinds of stuff that says, you know what, invest a little time. So I started making this prayer list. I put down all these people at work that I'm running into. I put down all of you guys. I put down this group. I put down my family. And I have a, and you know what? My prayer, all of a sudden I'm praying for 15-20 minutes a morning. So because I've got something to focus on. And, man, I'm telling you what, all of a sudden, now my job situation hasn't gotten any better, but my attitude has gotten just a little better. Just a little better. Because I'm, for all of a sudden I started asking God into those people's lives that I work with. And they have become from being B-words to people. They've turned into people. Right? And I've had such a bad view of them. And I've been praying that God would guide and direct them. And now here's what came to me this morning in my meditation. That I have asked God to guide and direct their lives. My deal is, am I going to believe that He is, or am I not? Am I going to believe that God is really active in doing what I ask? And you know how much easier it made to me that when my boss tells me something to do, I can say, that must be God's direction. And then I can follow it with a clear conscience. Not have to question it, not have to do anything. You know, just carry it out. May not like it, but I just have to do it. And, you know, I guess what it is just yet another level of surrender that I get into. And yet another level of figuring out that my way does not work. It just doesn't work. And that when I submit my will to God's, the blessings that come are great. When I submit my will to God's will. And the other thing is my wife and I are celebrating 11 years of marital bliss, of which the bigger part of that is bliss. You know, we have had our ups and downs. But the thing we said when we got married is divorce is not an option. We will stay together. It doesn't matter. There is no problem so big that we can't get through the other side of it. And we've proven that true. We've proven that true. Commitment, like to this group, I tell you I'm going to be here, I'll be here. I tell you I'm not going to be here, I let you know why I'm not going to be here. Right? That kind of commitment is the very same thing I have to carry into my work. I have to carry into my home. I have to carry into Alcoholics Anonymous. And the thing that's telling is when I honor that commitment, I seem to stay consistent in the things I engage in. And what a good deal that is. I'm glad to be here. Thanks.
There is no smoking in the church, so if you smoke, please do so outside and use the butt cans provided. We will now take a 10-minute coffee break before our main speaker. We'll start again at 8:40.